Hey, good evening, Truth Seekers. Mike Malloy here on the Nova M Radio Network. Thanks for tuning in. Stick around for a while. Oh, by the way, I'll be off tomorrow night on my way to Phoenix. KTLK's Johnny Wendell will be sitting in for me tomorrow night. I'll be back Monday. And Phoenix Truth Seekers, if you haven't got your ticket yet for the gig tomorrow night with Scott Ritter and me, sorry about that. God. Oh, I love this coffee. If you haven't gotten your ticket yet for the event Saturday night, the 23rd, sponsored by Nova M and KPHX in Phoenix, there might be 15 or 20 left. I got an email today from He Who Must Be Obeyed that said there were about 30 tickets left, and that was about 4 o'clock, 3 o'clock this afternoon. So that's out of 400 or 500, I think. So glom one up if you haven't gotten one and they're still available. All right? Love to see you at the gig Saturday night, KPHX in Phoenix. Too much happening today. First of all, the senators are okay. They're okay. Kerry, Biden, Hagel were on a helicopter or two. I guess it was just one. And the story is they were forced down in the mountains of Afghanistan because of a snowstorm. Okay, fair enough. No one was injured. According to a statement from Kerry's office, the senators and their delegation returned to Bagram Airfield in a motor convoy and then left for Turkey. The Kerry statement said, Senator Kerry thanks the American troops who were terrific as always and who continue to do an incredible job in Afghanistan. Why do they have to always say it like that? They continue to do an incredible job in Afghanistan. No disrespect to the troops who have been placed in that kind of a situation. I'm talking about regular Army and Marines. I'm not talking about the private contractors. To hell with the private contractors. If they want to play Foreign Legion, boy, let them. Go ahead, do it, whatever. But the Marine Corps and U.S. Army people who are there, they're not doing an incredible job except to survive. That's the incredible job they should do. This is the Afghanistan war is almost as pointless as the Iraq war, if not equally as pointless. There is no reason to invade a country because 19 terrorists, 15 of whom came from Saudi Arabia, hit your country, if you want to believe the official story. You might want to hit Saudi Arabia. And as far as Afghanistan being the place where these people were trained, well, okay, then what you do is send in several well-trained CIA hitmen, and God knows we have enough of them, and say, here are the pictures, here are the names, here are the descriptions, go kill them. That's all. But let us not forget that Afghanistan has to be secure from forces who would wish the American oil companies other than good luck, because Afghanistan has got to sustain a pipeline all the way across the country. We forget that's why we're there. I swear to God, invading, declaring a war on terror because 19 people came here, 15 of whom were from Saudi Arabia, if you believe the official story, and wreaked havoc and murdered upwards of 3,000 people in this country. Oh, well, let's invade, let's declare wars. That'll help. Anyway, Kerry, Biden, and Hagel are okay, unless all three are dead and they've been replaced by CIA lookalikes. You know, I don't even know anymore. I really don't. Got an email from Dana Siegelman, whose father is in prison in Alabama because the Bush crime family decided to see how far they could go. Dan Siegelman was the governor, former governor of Alabama. He's now serving time in prison based on conviction and charges that anybody with more than an eighth grade education, even in Alabama, no offense, folks, would understand are phony charges, trumped up charges. There has been talk and talk and talk that 60 Minutes was going to do a segment on this particular form of political prisoner taking in the United States by the Bush crime family. The new schedule is this Sunday. So that's Sunday, the 24th, 7 p.m. Eastern Time. So you might want to tune in and watch this. What else we got here? Like I say, just so much happened today. The attack in Belgrade on the U.S. Embassy, that doesn't come as a big surprise, I don't think, to anyone who remembers. You know, like George Bush says, there's no such thing as short-term history. Well, if you remember back to 98-99, the NATO attack on Serbia, and the killing of hundreds, not thousands, I don't think, but hundreds of Yugoslav civilians, Serbs, in an effort to stop what was identified as ethnic cleansing in Kosovo. The anger, the residual anger from that, still is there. And the declaration of Kosovo as an independent country is not too much different from, I can get arguments for this, I frankly don't care, I really don't, but it's not too much different from the southeastern United States declaring their independence from the United, oh, wait a minute, that was done, wasn't it? Yeah, what happened? Oh, that's right, that was called the Civil War. Gosh. So the Kosovars, the people are now mostly Muslim, in that breakaway province, if that's the right term, have declared themselves independent. The Serbs, of course, most of this goes back to the breakup of the Ottoman Empire and the rage, or the establishment of the Ottoman Empire, really, and the rage that was felt when the Turks, quote, came roaring up through the soft underbelly of Europe and did what they did, and yada, yada. Hell, there's no point in talking about it. But, there was violence. Let's just put it one sentence. Violence directed against the United States and Serbia, or in Belgrade, Yugoslavia today. And it's going to get worse, much worse, in, as Bush says, that part of the world. We've had two world wars begin pretty much in that area, haven't we? The John McCain thing we'll get to lightly in a moment, very lightly. Got this email from Kay in San Francisco. She writes, okay, I gave it 24 hours before jumping to conclusions about the mainstream media's non-coverage of O'Reilly's lynching comment. As of 12 p.m. Pacific Standard Time today, there is nothing in what we would consider the mainstream press. Like I said yesterday, I don't think of Keith Olbermann as mainstream because I suspect that the people who watch him for the most part are progressive political junkies like us. Google results? Well, the LA Times pops up, but it's a link to a blog, not a story. Other sources? Minneapolis City pages. Fox News, which consists of a transcript of an interview between Dennis Miller and O'Reilly. I'm getting nauseous just thinking about that, Kay writes. WorldGolf.com, MediaBistro.com, Northwest Progressive Institute Official Blog.com, etc. Say too. But McCain's alleged affair? All over the place. As sickening of a statement as this is about the mainstream media, I do have to admit to some Schadenfreude that this is now happening to someone on the so-called family values side. Regarding the abysmal failure of the mainstream media to cover anything of real importance anymore, today in U.S. history I had the kids do a comparison. She's a school teacher. Between what happened in 1917 when the suffragists were held as political prisoners and brutally force-fed, and what has been going on at Guantanamo. Out of the 60 students I've seen so far today, exactly two even know what Guantanamo is, and only one knew where it is on the map. I just can't stand it, so I better go grab some lunch. Kay in San Francisco.
I was flying on UA-93. That shadow in the footage, it was probably me. I'm the rumor, I'm the doubt, I'm the lie. But you wouldn't stand near me if you didn't want to die. Everything you know is
love the way you talk.
Has he mentioned yet tonight how much he hates these people? It's more Mike Malloy.
It's about 21 past the hour. Right before we went on the program, I got this. I haven't had a chance to check it yet, but I will trust my emailer. It's from the Houston Star-Telegram, written by Jack Douglas Jr. there. I'm sorry, not Houston, Fort Worth Star-Telegram. And the writer is Jack Douglas. Police were told to stop screening people for weapons before the Obama rally began Wednesday night. Security details at Barack Obama's rally Wednesday stopped screening people for weapons at the front gates more than an hour before the Democratic presidential candidate took the stage at Reunion Arena. The order to put down the metal detectors and stop checking purses and laptop bags came as a surprise to several Dallas police officers who said they believed it was a lapse in security. Several Dallas police officers said it worried them that the arena was packed with people who got in without even a cursory inspection. They spoke on condition of anonymity because, they said, the order was made by federal officials who were in charge of security at the event. Son of a bitch. They're trying to assassinate him, aren't they? They are. If I were the Obamas, I don't know. I don't know. Maybe a quick letter to Blackwater. Well, no, never forget that. Federal officials. Now hear this. Understand this, okay? And again, this is another one of those stories I haven't seen any place. Have you? Federal officials who were in charge of security at Barack Obama's political rally last night in Dallas ordered the Dallas police to stop checking for weapons. I have a very, very sick feeling in the pit of my stomach about what's going to happen in the next 6 or 7 months.
Does O'Reilly know about this? Because he might be able to, you know, put away his noose. I wonder if they call it the Jack Ruby Law.
The Jack Ruby Law, yeah. Security details at Barack Obama's rally Wednesday stopped screening people for weapons at the front gates more than an hour before he took the stage. Dallas police officers said it worried them that the arena was packed with people who got in without even a cursory inspection. They spoke on condition of anonymity because, they said, the order was made by federal officials who were in charge of security at the event. Donald in Augusta writes about the McCain thing. He says, Mike, the real question is always the same. Who does this story benefit? Certainly not the Republican opponents of McCain. He thinks the McCains doth protest too little. I think they allowed this story to go forward for one purpose only, and that purpose was to rally the conservative base behind McCain. Everyone had basically stated the conservatives would not support McCain. With Obama apparently winning the Democratic nomination, the hated Hillary Clinton is no longer in the equation, so her hatred by conservatives would not be a rallying force for McCain. Now, if you can't get the hated Clintons, what's the next biggest target of the right? Well, of course, the hated liberal New York Times. McCain's lack of outrage and indignation at this story seems a little too moderated for me, given we all know what an incredible temper he reportedly has. He already has a fundraising letter out from this, and this gives him some street cred he sorely needs with conservatives. What do you think? I'm still thinking about the fact that federal officials, Donald, ordered the Dallas police to stop screening for weapons at the Barack Obama rally last night, an hour before the gates closed. No, what do I think about the McCain story? I don't know anymore. I don't know. Nothing in American politics is as it seems. Nothing. Nothing. The entire political fabric in this country is a tissue-thin tapestry of lies, deceit, backstabbing, trickery, smoke and mirrors. So, I don't know. I don't know about McCain and whether or not the whole thing was works to his advantage. I don't know. It certainly turned the pig man on a dime today, didn't it? Wasn't the pig man praising McCain on his filthy radio program today? I think he was. Talking about the New York Times. Everybody's trying to make it a story about the New York Times. As far as the Times story about, you know, his friendship with this female lobbyist, as Robert Perry writes, McCain must hope that Americans won't read the entire story, because if they do, they'll realize that his statement today, that he, quote, has never violated the public trust, never done favors to special interests or lobbyists, end quote, is simply a lie. That's a lie. And when he said it, when we watched that, was that just this morning? When we watched that this morning, when I watched it this morning, I thought, well, you lying son of a bitch. Do you really think that nobody remembers Lincoln Savings and Loan and Charles Keating? A little more on that when we come back. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
They brainwashed my great uncle, brainwashed my cousin Bob. They even got my grandma when she was working for the mob. Brainwash you while you're sleeping, while in your traffic jam. Brainwash you while you're weeping, while still a baby in your prime. Brainwashed by the military, brainwashed under duress. Brainwashed by the media, you're brainwashed by the press.
Mike Malloy Show. You are now entering a flying monkey free zone.
26 before the hour. Anyway, back to McCain. Robert Perry put it out there today that McCain probably thinks or hopes that the American people won't read the entire New York Times story today, which I would imagine A lot of people did read it in its entirety, but also it seems like everybody on all the talking heads on cable television did not read it because of what the focus was. But McCain said he never violated the public trust, never done favors for special interests or lobbyists. Now, that's a sweeping statement. He never violated the public trust. He has never done favors for special interests or lobbyists. That's what he said at his press thing this morning. What McCain left out of that, and McCain is lying. He's lying. One of the things that stands out about McCain is the way he helped one of his early financial backers, the Wheeler dealer Charles Keating. Remember that? He helped Keating frustrate oversight from federal banking regulators who were examining Keating's Lincoln Savings and Loan Association. McCain wrote letters for Charles Keating. He introduced bills and pushed a Keating associate for a job on a banking regulatory board, all making it all the easier to cover up the grand theft and fraud that Keating was involved in. 2 years after all of this, Lincoln Savings Loan collapsed, and no one will ever know how much it cost the U.S. taxpayers. The official figure is about $4 billion. Now, as Perry writes, not only was McCain taking donations from Keating and his business circle, getting free rides on Keating's corporate jet, and enjoying joint vacations in the Bahamas, McCain's second and current wife, the beer fortune heiress Cindy Hensley, had invested with Keating in an Arizona shopping mall. And it goes on. When McCain... One of the things McCain did, he wowed the Washington Press Corps with his sponsorship of ethics legislation, such as the McCain-Feingold bill, that limited so-called soft money contributions to the political parties. But as Perry writes, his self-righteousness often rubbed other politicians the wrong way. During campaign 2000, for instance, some Bush supporters called McCain's lectures about ethics sanctimonious. That's coming from Bush supporters. Others, including Bush himself, cited the hypocrisy of McCain soliciting campaign donations from corporations which did business before the Senate Commerce Committee under McCain's control. It just goes on. If you want to see this, go to consortiumnews.com. Robert Perry's. It's called McCain's Never is a Long Time. He adds, if American voters read the full New York Times article, they will see, or read the full New York Times article today, they will see the story of lobbyist Vicky Eisenman in the context of McCain's conflicted attitude toward ethics and the compromising relationships that always surround power in Washington. In a statement released by his Republican campaign, McCain, of course, is accusing the newspaper of having, quote, lowered the standards to engage in a hit-and-run smear campaign, end quote. And the statement then goes further. It says, quote, John McCain has a 24-year record of serving our country with honor and integrity, has never violated the public trust, never done favors for special interests or lobbyists, and who will not allow a smear campaign to distract from the issue at stake in this election, end quote. And as Perry points out, McCain's categorical denial of never simply doesn't square with the historical record. McCain is a liar in addition to being borderline personality disorder type. People that liked Bush will love McCain. Now, something to add here. This comes from CBS. It's in kind of a press release for 60 Minutes tomorrow night. But listen to this. A Republican operative in Alabama says Karl Rove asked her to try to get information on the state's Democratic governor that he was unfaithful to his wife in an effort to end Siegelman's campaign for reelection. Here they go again. God, I'd like to spend about 20 minutes alone with Karl Rove. Oh, I swear to God I would. Rove's attempt to smear Don Siegelman, according to CBS, was part of a Republican campaign to ruin him that finally succeeded in imprisoning him, says the operative Jill Simpson. Ms. Simpson speaks to Scott Pelley in her first television interview to be broadcast on 60 Minutes Sunday night at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. Simpson spoke to Pelley because, she says, Siegelman's 7-year sentence for bribery bothers her. She recalls what Rove, then Bush's senior political advisor, asked her to do at a 2001 meeting in this exchange from Sunday night's report. Pelley says, so Karl Rove asked you to take pictures of Siegelman? Simpson replies, yes. Pelley clarifies, in a compromising sexual position with one of his aides? Simpson says, yes, if I could. Simpson says she found no evidence of infidelity despite months of observation. She tells Pelley that Rove, who had been a top Republican strategist in Alabama, had made requests for information from her before in her capacity as an opposition researcher for Republicans running for office. Rove would not speak to 60 Minutes, but elsewhere has denied being involved in any effort to discredit Siegelman. Now, you remember Siegelman was convicted of bribery in a case that has drawn criticism from Democrats and Republicans. In fact, 52 former state's attorneys general from both political parties have petitioned Congress to investigate Siegelman's case. Grant Woods, the former Republican Attorney General of Arizona and one of those who petitioned Congress, tells Scott Pelley Sunday night, quote, I haven't seen a case with this many red flags on it that pointed toward a real injustice being done. I personally believe that what happened here is that they targeted Don Siegelman because they could not beat him fair and square, end quote. Siegelman was the only politician in Alabama history to be elected to all four of the state's highest offices, Secretary of State, Attorney General, Lieutenant Governor, and Governor, and he did it as a Democrat in a heavily Republican state. So, just strong, strong, strong suggestion to watch this Sunday night, 60 Minutes. These son of a bitches. I swear to God. And Rove, where was Rove today? Was today or yesterday? At the University of Pennsylvania? Why do universities allow this neo-Nazi on their campuses?
Oh, freedom of speech, Mike.
Oh, okay. Some quick cuts from insane John McCain at the press briefing today in Toledo. He was there to campaign. He didn't get much campaigning in, nor did he get to discuss the Kosovo-Serbia crisis, as he had planned to do. Instead, he held a news conference to discuss the Times article. That, you know, quotes a possibly improper relationship he had with lobbyist Vicky Eisenman. The improper relationship is that between a senator and a lobbyist. I know this is the United States, and what we want to know is, what went on between the sheets. But the real improper relationship is the one that Robert Perry points out, the one that you know about. The fact that this United States senator was so willing, this guy who touts himself as being uncorruptible, absolutely clean, doesn't deal with those people by his own statements. That's the filthy relationship between Vicky Eisenman and John McCain. This is from his opening remarks today.
I'm proud of my record of service to this country. I'm proud of my service as chairman of the Commerce Committee, which has oversight of literally hundreds of issues, the largest committee in the United States Senate.
Okay.
In terms of jurisdiction.
Okay.
And I will continue to serve, I will focus my attention in this campaign on the big issues, on the challenges that face this country, and I think that's what the American people are very interested in hearing about. Again, I'm very disappointed in the New York Times piece. It's not true.
John, look, Johnny Mac, let me tell you something. The American people are not interested in hearing your take on what you refer to are the big issues. The American people want to know whether or not she had sex with Vicky Eisenman, that's all. They want to know, because if you did, they'll stand and applaud you. You know, I mean, look at Bob Dole. He had to wind up in a Viagra ad, making visual passes at a minor. Was she a minor then, Brittany?
She was probably a junkie.
God, I hate these people. He went on for a while, and then he took some questions from the press, starting with this one. Senator, did you ever have any meeting with any of your staffers in which they would have intervened to ask you not to see Vicky Eisenman or to be concerned about appearances of being too close to a lobbyist?
No.
No meeting ever occurred?
No.
No staffer was ever concerned about a possible romantic relationship?
If they were, they didn't communicate that to me.
Did you ever have such a relationship?
No.
The New York Times is pretty explicit in quoting a couple of former aides, they say, saying that some of your aides intervened and confronted not just Ms. Eisenman, but you in particular, saying, stop seeing her, don't have a relationship with her, because this could hurt you. You're saying that did not happen?
I don't know if it happened at their level. It certainly didn't happen to me. And I do notice with some interest that it's, quote, former aides, that this whole story is based on anonymous sources. I don't think that that's really something that I'm very disappointed in that.
Well, it's not really anonymous sources, John. I mean, if you look at the story, it's one of your former top aides that you claim is still your best friend or good friend. It's not. Oh, never mind. We'll be back after the break. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Listening to Mike Malloy on Nova M Radio. Turn down your speakers. It'll be our secret.
It's It's about 9 before the hour. Back to McCain's press briefing this morning in response to the New York Times article. Finally, the so-called Maverick tried to explain how he's going to change Washington and stop all the soft money and pork barrel politicking and reform campaign financing and, you know, do all that while he continues to cozy up to weirdly attractive lobbyists on private jets and at $1,000 dinner parties. The reporter says, Senator, you on the campaign trail at every stop talk about how you want to change Washington, that you're a creature of Washington, but you say you want to change Washington. But this story really goes to the heart and perhaps contradicts the central theme of your campaign.
Well, Dan, I understand that, and that's why I'm so disappointed, you know, on a story based on, quote, anonymous sources, etc. But, look, I have a long record. As I said, a 50-year record, a 24-year record as a member of Congress, and I'll be asking people to look at my entire record. And I think that that will stand. But yes, this is a very disappointing event to pick up the paper this morning, actually to hear last night that the story was appearing after months of inquiries from the New York Times.
Oh, God. Well, again, what's the point in even paying attention to this? What we were supposed to do today was to watch CNN about the riots in Serbia. I said Belgrade, Yugoslavia, my bad, Belgrade, Serbia. But before we go there, what do you think the moralist-in-chief and McCain's best buddy in the Senate, Joe Lieberman, had to say about these charges? You know, nothing proved, kind of like in the Clinton case. When the charges first came out, when Monica Lewinsky claimed in her conversations with the blonde crazy woman, what was her name, Kathy? The one that had all the plastic surgery done. Remember her? How soon we forget. It was only 10 years ago. But Joe Lieberman was one of the first to condemn Bill Clinton. Now, he claims, of course, Lieberman has always claimed that his moral fiber comes from the fact that he's an Orthodox Jew and that he had no choice. Because, you know, one of the Ten Commandments says, thou shalt not commit adultery. Linda Tripp, thank you. But I wonder if his religious beliefs now are a little bit more flexible now that it's Johnny Mac. You think? I haven't heard from Lieberman today. He did speak? Lieberman? What did he say?
Oh, he was, I can't remember exactly, but he was very defensive of Johnny Mac.
Defending him.
Of insane McCain. Yeah, he, of course. Well, he's going to be the new Secretary of State.
And Cindy writes, just a thought, Mike, in case the Republicans who listen from the cracks in the earth don't get the point. The U.S. government spend millions to investigate Whitewater. And the same government spent millions to cover up the Lincoln SNL theft of billions, which case included Neil Bush as well as McCain. Is there just a whiff of hypocrisy here, or is it just blatant corruption coupled with an outright dare for the people to do anything about it? I think it's just a middle finger to America that politicians, especially Republicans and some Democrats and media, offer up anytime something like this happens. It's, you know, screw you. Go away. Get out of here. This is not your business. One last thing. Joe in San Diego says, Mike, I checked the background of Vicky Eisenman, and it shows her as a lobbyist for, is it CACI? CACI International. CACI was linked with the contractors involved in the Abu Ghraib torture. It seems torture makes strange bedfellows. Yeah, she's a lobbyist for a private security firm, private militia firm, that performs torture. And John McCain, I wonder, that John McCain was tortured. That sets up a very curious and almost too kinky for words possible dynamic between between Vicki Eisenman and John McCain. Nah, don't even go there. And Kathy reminds us that freedom of speech, where it concerns Roe, talking on college campuses, freedom of speech means that Roe can stand in the minus degree cold on a university campus and give any damn speech he wants. It doesn't mean that the college or university has to pay him for it. And he damn sure doesn't give speeches like this for nothing. Well, yeah, that's true. That's true. I wonder how long Karl Rove would scream freedom of speech against the campus progressives and liberals who protested his appearance if he wasn't being paid tens of thousands of dollars to go to the campus and spew his filth. When we come back after this break, some information that you might find interesting as to why Kosovo was pushed to get its independence, which every group, tribe wants, and then the independence was so quickly sanctioned by the United States and Great Britain. You may find it interesting. I'm Mike Malloy. Stay with us. Welcome back. 6 past the hour. Malloy Show on Nova M. And do you know why the Secret Service told the Dallas police to stop checking for weapons at the Barack Obama rally in Dallas yesterday? Do you know what the reason was? The Secret Service said to the Dallas police, and this is in the story in the Star-Telegraph, the Secret Police said, well, the lines are too long out here. We want to get everybody in before the event starts. That was the reason the Secret Service gave for turning off the metal detectors and telling the Dallas police to back off, don't look in any more briefcases or purses. And, of course, the Dallas cops are like, holy Christ, we've been through this once before back in 1963. So, you know, the U.S. government was involved in the murder of Dr. Martin Luther King. I don't think there's any doubt about that. We'll never know, of course. And now Barack Obama. It's kind of scary out there, isn't it? Kind of scary. Regarding the Charles Keating email here, says, Mike, did you know that Keating was a devout Christian and anti-porn crusader? Ah, hypocrisy. Yeah, a couple of you have emailed me about Keating. I'd forgotten about that. Keating was, he was a great Christian and just hated pornography while he is stealing everything he can get his filthy hands on. And, of course, McCain is assisting him. And yet McCain stood there today and said, well, I've never done, you know. This story blew right by us yesterday. A couple of people sent it to me, but we got caught up in other stuff, and it's a shame that this wasn't covered in mainstream media, so-called. You can find this at americablog.com. Early voting started yesterday, Wednesday, I think, in Texas. And in Waller County, a primarily rural county about 60 miles outside of Houston, the county made the decision to offer only one early voting location at the county courthouse in Hempstead, Texas, the county seat, which was a little over 7 miles away. So students at Prairie View A&M University organized to protest the decision because they felt it hindered their ability to vote. And for background, Prairie View A&M is one of Texas's historically black universities. It has a very different demographic feel than the rest of the county. There has been a long history of dispute over what the students felt is disenfranchisement. There was a lot of outrage in 2006 when students felt they were unfairly denied the right to vote when their registrations somehow just didn't get processed. Oh, my goodness. Well, I'm sorry. I'm sorry, boys and girls. Now, don't get all upset. We just didn't get it. You can vote next time. You now be good, Negroes. Go back to school. We got you in school. What do you want? So they organized the Prairie View A&M students the other day, organized a massive, they walked 7 miles, hundreds of them, to register to vote. And in America blog, the question is asked, would that the traditional media focused on stories like this instead of the incessant harping about the fake issues in which they get so caught up? Students having to march to vote. That is real news. It just unbelievable. And how many people out there are saying tonight, white people out there saying tonight, well, Mike, you know, your attitude on race is just, you know, antediluvian, man. Hey, listen, look, we got a black man that's running for president and got a good chance. You know, it's not Jesse Jackson. This is, it's not Al Sharpton. This is a man. What are you complaining about, Mike? I mean, come on, black folks in this country, well, what do they want? Right? A lot of people, a lot of white people are saying that. And what these white folks don't understand is the beat goes on and on and on and on. My hat's off to the students at Prairie View A&M for when they were told, well, yes, young people, you can register to vote. Yes, you can vote, but it's down the road about 7 miles. We just couldn't set up a registrar here. We couldn't, not register to vote, the early voting. We couldn't put a little precinct in here and bring a couple of white ladies in to let you do your early voting with the Diebold machine, so your vote doesn't matter anyway, you silly gooses or geese. But if you do want to vote early, down the road, just get out here on the blacktop and go down about 7 miles, take a right, and there you are. And so the students did just that. Yassa, Mr. County Voter Registrar. Sure. Now, as far as Kosovo, the independence of Kosovo, which is now pretty much a Muslim state, on January 10th, just passed, Swiss-based Manas Petroleum Corporation broke the news. There are large fields of oil and natural gas reserves in Albania, which is right next door to Kosovo. The areas encompass about 750,000 acres along the northwest to southeast border with Albania. Now, the estimates so far, and these are unproved, but so far the estimates are up to 3 billion barrels of oil and 3 trillion cubic feet of natural gas. Currently, the Balkans region has small proved oil reserves of about 345 million barrels, of which an estimated 198 million barrels are in Albania. Proved natural gas reserves are much larger at around 2.7 trillion cubic feet. So, this development further underscores, of course, Kosovo's importance and the cost that it's going to mean to Serbia. Kosovo is part of Serbia, at least it was. Since 1999, it's been a Washington, D.C., NATO-occupied colony stripped of its sovereignty, pretty much in violation of international law. That's, you know, the Ruskies are right about that. It's been run by 3 successive U.S.-installed puppet prime ministers with known ties to Balkan organized crime and drug trafficking. But never mind. So was Ferdinand Marcos. So was... Oh, don't get started on the list, Malloy. It's the home, Kosovo is, to one of America's largest military bases in the world, Camp Bondsteel, It is part, Kosovo is, part of Washington's regional strategic objective to control and transport Central Asia's vast oil and gas reserves to, you know, selected markets, most in the West. So on February 17th, during a special parliamentary session, Kosovo unilaterally declared its independence. The action violates international law. Kosovo is as much a part of Serbia as Illinois is one of America's 50 states. to no surprise, this comes from RINF Alternative News. To no surprise, Washington and dominant Western countries support this declaration. Opposed to it are Serbia, Russia, Spain, Greece, Portugal, Slovakia, Malta, Bulgaria, Romania, and Cyprus. A raspberry, a Bronx cheer to those states I just named. So isn't it interesting, the all the drum beating and chest beating about freedom for the Kosovars. And, okay, you can make a case. Sure, go ahead. Every tribal area deserves independence, and the whole country of Yugoslavia was just a forced confederation anyway. Until Marshal Tito died, and then it just broke into all these little pieces. So, you know, yawn, so what, doesn't mean a thing, except the access to all that oil and all that gas. So all of a sudden, Kosovo and its neighbor Albania become very, very important. And therefore, they need their freedom. Oh, God. Sometimes it's just so transparent, isn't it? It's just so transparent. All right, we're going to take your phone calls when we come back after this upcoming break. And when we do come back with your phone calls, I want to hear what you got to say. The phone number here is 800-989-1480. So if you're not online, come on, jump in here and join us. I want to hear what you got to say. Whatever you want to talk about regarding the topics of the day, you know, I mean, let's not talk about a new book you're writing, or, you know, let's just stick with the topics, all right? This is Nova M. I'm Mike Malloy.
Ready for Radical Talk Radio? Make mine Mike Malloy on Nova M.
Two past the hour. Let's do some phone calls here. LaShonda is calling from Austin, Texas, listening on the internet. LaShonda, welcome to the program.
Hey, Mike, what's going on tonight?
Just trying to get through this life and make it on to the next.
I know that's right. Oh, my God, the Clinton ladies in town tonight here.
Oh, yeah?
Got traffic all backed up. I'm like, oh, they were just being so funky with the tickets. I just said, forget it, and was like, whatever. It's just, oh, you know, just to touch on this point right quick, what you were talking about, just all this stuff, just the corruption, man. Every day is something different. Mm-hmm. I woke up this morning and saw all that fighting in the street. I'm like, Lord have mercy, what's going on?
Yeah.
And the people in Kosovo, they over there fighting and everything. And this fool, this is what I call Bush, your president, is in Africa dancing with the black people.
I saw just a little bit of that. What the hell was that? Where he was doing, I don't know what the dance was.
Let me tell you, I thought somebody sent that to me. I thought it was a joke, you know, like them little puppet heads.
Right.
So I was like, well, okay, I need a laugh. And I watched the video and was like, oh, it's, no. Hell no. I seen that fool and was like, let the church say hell no, sit down. And he had this goofy look on his face as he was dancing, and I'm thinking, he probably like, God, I hope they don't eat me. Maybe if I keep dancing, they'll be all right with me. But I'm like, trust me, George, don't nobody want to eat you. We smell your rotten soul from across the pond.
Really? God.
Crazy.
I couldn't believe that. I just caught a little bit of it on CNN. And, you know, I glanced up and glanced back down, and then my head snapped so hard I got whiplash. I thought, what in the hell did I just see? And I looked back, and yeah, there he was, and just like, oh, no, oh, God, please, no. I thought they were going to make him an honorary chief or something. You know, isn't that what they do with white people?
I guess right before they put him in the pot. See, I can joke like that because I'm black, so don't be talking about Mike, your call is racist.
Right.
But you know what I mean? It was just seeing that, and I'm going, oh my God, Abraham Lincoln never went over to Africa and did the two-step tango. What is up?
Yeah, I know. It just gets crazier and crazier, LaShonda. Remember,
I told you about we going to be waiting for Rod Sterling to come out on the Situation Room?
Yeah.
Get your TiVo ready. He going to pop up any day now, right before Jesus comes.
Right.
Okay, Mike, well, you guys have a great weekend, and I hate that I can't come to Arizona to check it out, but if you ever come to Texas, let me know.
I will. We have an affiliate in Dallas now, KMNY, and the time will come when I'll come down there, and I expect to see an Austin, Texas contingent. And y'all don't even have to walk, LaShonda. You can grab a Greyhound.
So. I know. I will get on the Iron Pep and come to Dallas to see you.
That sounds good. Thanks, LaShonda.
Bye, Mike. Have Bye-bye. A good night.
All right, you too. Take care.
That has to be one of the funniest things I've heard lately. Dancing around saying, no, no, don't eat me.
Maybe if I keep dancing.
They won't eat me.
They won't put me
it's like,
in the
no, that's
spot.
Just tenderizing.
Oh, my God. LaShonda cracks me up. Absolutely cracks me up. Chris is calling from Seattle, listening on KPTK. Hey, Chris.
Hey. I'm here.
Yes, you are.
I'm a little nervous.
Well, you don't even sound like it.
Well, I'm excited. Last night I heard on your program about O'Reilly's comment, so you got me all riled up.
Yeah.
And I'm a teacher.
Yeah.
So by coincidence, yesterday in class, I showed
that... Wait a minute. Don't reveal it, because I'll tell you what. I've got to put you on hold, and we got to do a break, and we'll come right back to you right after the break. And Chris is going to tell us what she did in class. Can't wait. Chris, stay right there. We'll come back right after the break. One open line here. The number's 800-989-1480. Jump in and join us if you like. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
Threshold bends over. Turn the order of the soul. When they say, repent. I wonder what they meant. When they say,
and your day screaming with Mike Malloy on Nova M Radio.
It's about 25 before the hour. We were talking with, who are we talking with? Chris, who called in from Seattle. All right, you did something in your classroom.
Okay, by coincidence, I had showed this documentary where Bill O'Reilly sued Al Franken. It's called The First Amendment Project.
Uh-huh.
So it's a really good video if you ever get a chance to look at it. It's really funny, and it's all about the Fox lawsuit against Al Franken. But anyway, so then you told us about the lynching comment. So then today I went back in and I told my class, mm-hmm. and one of my students, and oh, there was a huge gasp in the class when they heard the remark. And one of my students said that O'Reilly is not just racist, but he's also chauvinistic. So that his comment was directed at Michelle Obama, and this was like Don Imus,
right.
where he kind of combined the two. And it's like these right-wing chauvinists can't believe that there's anything stopping them from insulting women.
Mm-hmm.
So they kind of forget that, but you can't say that. But the fact that it's directed at a woman, it was just an interesting comment, I thought, and I kind of agree with it, makes them feel a little more like they kind of have the okay to do that.
A little more in control, a little more powerful.
Yeah, and it made him feel entitled to threaten to lynch the wife of a senator. It's just unbelievable.
I can't believe that comment has gone except for the Oberman program and here. Where
I told my class it was going to be everywhere. I said, you guys are not going to be able to walk 10 feet today and not hear something about it.
And nothing.
Nothing.
Yeah.
And it totally
and yet, and yet the Don Imus thing, I remember the day that that story broke, and I think every civil rights leader, either recognized or self-appointed, was all over media. I think people from the ADL, I didn't see any civil rights or human rights organizations that didn't have a spokesperson someplace talking about what that filthy, filthy, dirty, rotten, racist man Don Imus did. And he made a snotty...
I know, it was nothing compared to this.
Compared, when you talk about lynching...
It doesn't even compare.
There's nothing else. That's like talking to a Jewish person and offhandedly referencing the Holocaust. Lynching to black folk in this country carries the same power, I've been told. The same weight, the same
totally,
shock, the same
totally.
Horror.
And I just want to say one other quick comment. Your comment last night, in passing, that some talk show hosts masquerade as liberals,
mm-hmm.
completely explained my total bafflement about Ed Schultz.
Well, now you know.
The light bulb went on, and I'm released from total confusion.
Well, good. All right, now when you talk about your classroom, are you talking about your fellow students or the students you teach?
I teach college.
Oh, I see.
I teach college classes.
Oh, I see. Okay.
All right. With a real diverse makeup. And there were just like huge gasps, mm-hmm. and they were just all shocked. And I said, you guys are going to be hearing this all over the place today.
Ha, 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 ha.
And not a word, not a peep.
I know.
So anyway, you got me riled up last night.
Well, that's good, Chris.
That's your job.
That's my job. Thanks for checking in, okay?
Okay.
All right.
Bye-bye.
You take care. Take care. Here's an email from Olga. Regarding Kosovo. Hi, Mike. Over 500 years ago, when the Ottoman Empire invaded this territory, they murdered thousands of Serbians. They beheaded them and built a tower of heads. Kosovo means heads. If this information were published by the media, perhaps people would understand why this land truly belongs to Serbia. The very name of the region manifests who the indigenous people were at the time. The fact that the Albanians moved en masse to Kosovo should be a testimony to the hospitality of the Serbians. If decisions of land ownership depend on which ethnic group has the largest headcount, then southern Texas should come under the umbrella of Mexico and a portion of New York City should be governed by Puerto Rico, and so forth. Since the invasion of the Ottomans over 500 years ago, every year on June 28th, Serbians everywhere memorialize the tragedy of the occupation of the Ottomans. June 28th is also the day when Gavrilo Princip assassinated the Archduke of Austria. Please believe me, I don't believe in violence, but the Archduke, who had plans to overtake Serbia, was not wise in choosing June 28th as the day to visit Serbian Bosnia. In fact, it was an insult. Interestingly, this is not mentioned in the media. Olga. Yeah, the only reason I'm laughing is because I do appreciate the humor in what you said. I didn't know that the Archduke Ferdinand was assassinated on the 28th, thus beginning the chain of events that led to World War I. But thanks for writing, Olga. Things get curiouser and curiouser, don't they? Back to your phone calls. Dick is calling from Seattle, listening on KPTK. Hey, Dick. Hey, Dick.
Hey, yeah, Mike.
Hey, how you doing?
Pretty good. You know, I think we've got a good chance to elect a real leader with a lot of the qualities and the style of JFK and President Obama. But, you know, at the same time, I'm kind of hoping he chooses more wisely for a vice president. I was thinking maybe Vice President Clinton might give him the protection, you know, that he might need, sort of a kind of a reverse Cheney. But what I wanted to comment on...
That's an interesting thought.
Yeah. What I really wanted to comment on was some revisionist history on JFK, which all too often we seem to get from some of the establishment liberals that never cared for him. Kennedy wasn't a Cold Warrior, you know. He just played one to get elected. I mean, he stood in the way of the real Cold War hawks, you know, first with the Cuban Missile Crisis, you know, when they wanted to launch, and he denied them regular troops in Vietnam, and, of course, he implemented a withdrawal that was effected in December just after they killed him.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there's some interesting photos. For instance, there's a photo that shows General Edward Lansdale, who is a big-time Pentagon CIA general, who you can see in a picture walking past the three tramps in Dealey Plaza in Jim Garrison's book On the Trail of the Assassins, you know. And, you know, there's an excellent book called Battling Wall Street, the Kennedy Presidency. It's written by Professor Donald Gibson of the University of Pittsburgh. And he kind of puts JFK, I think, in the proper focus. Just to quote a couple of sentences.
Well, wait. How does this tie in with what we're talking about tonight, Dick?
Well, I was listening to you last night, and I heard some comments on JFK, and I thought it was a good way to tie it into our President Obama, because I think he's going to get elected, and they got the same style.
Well, yeah, but you have to admit that they may have some of the same rhetorical style, but they are as worlds apart as possible. And listen, I do want to move on. No disrespect intended here, Dick, but I just don't want to get too far into the Kennedy thing tonight. We'll revisit it. Thanks for checking in, pal. Malcolm is calling from Phoenix, listening on KPHX. Malcolm, welcome to the program.
Hey, how you doing? I just wanted to talk about, I know you touched on it last night, but I haven't heard any more about Michelle Obama's comments, and not what she said, but how they put out that audio video that cut out what she actually said. So it wasn't like taking something out of context. It was almost like taking the context out of what she said.
Right, exactly. What?
Why haven't we heard more about that? I mean,
I guess mainstream media feels it's been dealt with. I mean, what are they going to say? Are they going to say this was this was a bad thing to have done? Are they going to say, first of all, Fox News is not going to say anything about it. I don't know why CNN would. I'm still waiting for CNN to explain why they had on Anderson Cooper's program closed captioning that said Obama had received a congratulatory phone call from Al-Qaeda. You know, I'm still waiting for that one. So, I think there's something that we really, really need to take seriously. We talk a lot about the evilness of mainstream media. I think we have to understand that the only interest mainstream media has is their own. They are not interested in truth, justice, dignity, decency, morality, or ethical behavior. They're just not. So as far as garbling Michelle Obama's words, no matter who did it, as far as using the word lynch where it concerns Michelle Obama, don't be surprised, Malcolm, when mainstream media doesn't respond to that at all. You live in the United States of America in the year 2008, and things are a little slicker now, but not that much different from what they were 50 years ago.
Abraham and Martin and John.
Do not go gently into that good night. Rage, rage against the flying monkey right with Mike Malloy.
10 before the hour, Philip is calling from St. Louis, listening on Sirius Satellite Radio. Hey, Philip.
Hey, Mike. I listened to the Democratic debate tonight, and Hillary Clinton had the audacity to tell Barack Obama that he should use his own words and not use the words of his co-chair. I think we all need to call her and tell her to fire her speechwriters and, you know, any focus groups or think tanks she's got working for her.
That's such a bogus issue because
it's
so bogus. It just turns my stomach, and I don't care what politician accuses what politician of, in the heat of a political rally, stealing somebody else's words. Oh, Jesus, somebody tell me an original phrase that hasn't been used in political rallies. It's such a bogus issue, but that's all the Clinton campaign has right now.
Yeah, well, I got to let you go, Mike.
All right. Thanks a lot.
Thanks.
Wonder why I had to go so quick. Maybe he got a call on the scanner and he has to go arrest people. Lewis is calling from Miami, listening on WINZ. Hey, Lewis.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm all right.
I was listening to a little bit of the debate, and I wanted to show my like for Hillary and dislike for Obama because of a comment.
Okay, what was the comment?
Hillary said that she would only sit down to negotiate with Cuba if there was changes. But Obama said that he would negotiate if there was no changes. It doesn't matter for him.
Well, isn't that the way you get change? By sitting down and negotiating with the person with whom you disagree? How will the new Cuban government, after Castro and after Raul, how will they know what is expected unless people sit down and talk with them?
Yeah, but you have to fight a tyrant. You can't sit down and talk to a tyrant.
But do you want a solution? The United States has been fighting the tyrant for 49 years. Do you want a solution, or do you want to just continue this asinine attitude of the U.S. toward Cuba? What do you want? Tell me what you want.
No, I want a solution, but not to sit down and talk. Some kind of...
Well, how do you get a solution if you don't sit down and talk? There's only one other way. There's only one other way. That's to bomb.
Kind of an invasion.
Yeah, an invasion. Is that what you want?
An invasion or something.
Is that what you want?
That's what I really wanted.
Do you want to be the first person off the boat with your rifle and a storm ashore at the Bay of Pigs, maybe, or someplace like that? Do you want to be the first one?
Well, something like that, you know.
No, not something like that, Lewis. Is this what you want? Are you saying you will take up a weapon and go to Cuba and get involved in an invasion? Is that what you want? I'm not challenging you. I'm just asking you.
Well, if I have to.
Well, then you don't have to. There's another option. Negotiation. You sit down and talk. Why? I mean, do you not understand that?
Well, I don't know. I understand.
Let me ask you something, Lewis. I don't know how old you are. You're under 25, I would imagine, right?
No, in my 40s.
You're in your 40s? You sound awfully young. All right, when, since 1959, since the revolution, when has anybody in this country, in the government, you know, made a phone call to Fidel and said, okay, look, this is crazy. We do business with the Chinese communists half a world away. The Chinese communists have the wherewithal to end the United States. Why we're picking on Castro, I don't know. Here, look, Fidel, let's sit down and talk this over. Now, let me ask you something, Louis.
Yeah.
Who in the American government in 5 decades has ever done that?
I don't know my history.
Okay, let me answer for you. Nobody.
Okay.
Now, next question. What has that resulted in, Louis? Nobody talking to Castro, isolating Cuba, causing the people down there not to understand what advantages there are in a democratic form of government, because we have thrown our ass in the air and said, okay, we're going to embargo the country. So what was accomplished, Louis, in 49 years? What was accomplished?
Well, it hasn't solved anything, but...
Bingo! Are you looking for a solution or not?
But Fidel has...
No, wait. I'm sorry. I'm not trying to disrespect you. Are you looking for a solution or not?
Yeah, I'm looking for a solution.
Okay. If 49 years of embargoes and threats and assassination attempts and invasions have not worked, what does that leave?
No, I know what you're saying, but...
Wait. Stay with me. What does that leave? Negotiation.
No.
Talking.
Negotiation, but listen.
There you go.
He's crapped on the U.S. many times.
What?
He's crapped on the U.S. many times.
What has he done? This little island country, what have they done to the United States? Has he tried to assassinate somebody? Oh, that's right, Kennedy. Come on, Louis.
They blew up airplanes and sent criminals.
Yeah,
over
do you
here.
Know who blew up an airplane?
Yeah.
A guy named Bosch. He was a CIA, a plant. He blew a Cuban airliner out of the sky that took about 7 or 8 members of a Cuban soccer team. I think it was a soccer team. Orlando Bosch, he lives right down there in Miami where you live.
No, it was the people of the
oh my God! Threat. All right, Louis. This is where you and I are going to have to stop, because
right.
I'm more than willing to talk to you, but when you don't even know the history, then I got to back off, man. Because what will happen? Very simply, I'll start getting pissed off, and then we don't go any further. But let me just say this to you, Louis. Obama has the right idea. You sit down, you talk. What's the worst that can happen? If you're negotiating and the person you're negotiating with says, ah, screw you, and gets up and walks out, what's the worst that can happen? You want an example of how desperately conversation is needed? Look at the Israelis and the Palestinians. Look at the Cuban exiles. Look at the, oh, God, come on, Louis. Come on. If you want a solution, you're right. You got 2 choices, invade or negotiate. I would think negotiation, after all these years, would probably make the most sense. Thanks for calling, Louis. Welcome back. It's about 7 past the hour. I got an email here from Bill who writes, Mike, CNN pointed out that Hillary's closing statement tonight was almost a direct quote from John Edwards. Yeah, a couple of people sent that to me, the actual what she actually said and what Edwards has said. Yeah, it's kind of a shame, I guess. I don't care who the candidate is, when they realize that their candidacy or their attempt to get the nomination of their party, Democrat, Republican, whoever, I don't care. And it doesn't make any difference what the race is, House, Senate, governorship, county commissioner, or president. There comes a point when they realize their campaign has jumped the shark, and it's like all downhill from then on. Hillary Clinton, I think Hillary realized this after the Wisconsin and Hawaii primaries the other night. Her candidacy her attempt to get the Democratic Party nomination for president is ended. It's just a matter of time. If it takes Ohio and Texas, okay, it takes Ohio and Texas. Somebody sent me an email and said Hillary ought to consider redecorating her Senate office. I think Hillary Clinton probably is being told by the people who really matter in U.S. presidential campaigning, and that is the people who make the contributions, that it's time for her to realize that the game is over. I don't think the United States right now, or the voters in the United States right now, this is just a guess, but I think most of the so-called base of the Democratic Party, and I put myself in there, although I have some problems even with that group, but the base of the Democratic Party has had its stomach full of DLC Democrats. We really, really, really have had enough. Enough of us to skew the voting in these primaries in favor of a non-DLC Democrat, which Barack Obama seems to be. Now, okay. There may be some big invisible hand behind the curtain pulling all the strings. Maybe Barack Obama is nothing more than another DLC. Okay. But perception is reality, and sometimes that gets us in awful, awful, awful trouble. But I think the attitude, the mood in this country right now is we've had enough corporate Democrats. We've had enough. We've had enough. And I don't think there's any question. Is there? Is there still question about where Hillary sits on the political spectrum? Is there any question? I mean, somebody who votes in favor of continuing cluster bombs, someone who votes in favor of virtual fences along the southern border, somebody who votes with Bush more than she votes against Bush, someone who votes to give that insane son of a bitch authority to launch a war whenever he wants to, and then tries to say, well, that's not what I had in mind. I mean, it just goes on and on. I'll say it again. Just take a look at the voting record. And not in comparison. I'm not suggesting that you compare Hillary Clinton's voting record to anybody's, not to Republicans, not to other Democrats. Just look at her record. Now, very few, I found this to be the case. I swear I found this to be the case. In my little universe, very few people who support Hillary Clinton support her on the basis of her voting record. They support her for some other reason, but not on the basis of her record. And she's been in the Senate long enough now. She has a record. You can take a look at what Hillary Clinton felt that she agreed with to the extent that she would cast her vote in favor of a certain nomination or a certain piece of legislation. You can also tell where Hillary Clinton stands by taking a look at what she voted against. I mean, why listen to anybody, right or left, up or down? I don't care where the comment comes from, when you have the ability to get the information firsthand, your own damn self. Why listen to anybody? regarding what we're talking about, Hillary Clinton. If you really think Hillary Clinton is a liberal or a progressive in the classical sense of liberal and progressive, how do you come to that conclusion? What else is there to evaluate someone who's been in office as long as Hillary Clinton has, except the voting record? What else is there? And this is where I think so many people who support Hillary are why so many people support Hillary. There's an emotional tie, perhaps. There's a gender tie. I have no idea. But maybe it's wanting Bill back on the scene. I don't know. But if you are really talking about someone who will be president of the United States for the next 4 years and possibly eight, and you're willing to vote for someone, take a look at their record. Barack Obama has a record. He has a record in the Illinois legislature. He has a record in the United States Senate. And for the people to say, well, it's the Illinois state legislature, that's harder to get things done than in the U.S. Congress. Take a look at the record. Why do so many otherwise dedicated Democrats refuse to do that? Why is there this ugliness between Obama supporters and Clinton supporters within the Democratic Party? And usually, I shouldn't say usually, my experience has been that most of the ugliness is coming from the Clinton side. I don't know if that's true. I'm just saying, I mean, it's true in my little world, my little universe. So why not just calmly, rationally, if it's still possible, which, okay, there's a question, maybe it's not possible anymore, to calmly and rationally take a look at someone's record since the time they have been in an elective office. Take a look at what they voted for. Take a look at what they voted against. And if rationality is to prevail, isn't that the only basis on which you vote for someone or vote for that person's opponent based on their record? How much longer are people going to say, well, okay, so she voted Republican light, but she has a D after her name? For God's sake, how much longer is that going to go on? Oh, well. It's I'll get the emails now from the Hillary supporters, or comments will wind up on various threads around the internet. Oh, that goddamn Malloy did it again. Oh, I hate him. He just goes after Hillary. He just attacks Hillary left and right. Well, I don't attack Hillary. I attack her record. How else are you going to determine what a politician will do except by looking at what they've done? I mean, why is that so hard? That's not ideological claptrap. That's taking a look at the record. Oh, never mind. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
Rage On. It's Mike Malloy.
You make out. Seem to make a good beginning. Someone else ends up winning. Don't seem fair. Don't you care?
Hang on. Help is on its way. I'll be there in
21 past the hour. Back to your phone calls. Brian is calling from New Hampshire, listening on the internet. Hey, Brian, welcome to the program.
Hi, Mike. I just wanted a quick aside there for the caller from the last hour, Luis. He talking about Fidel Castro. He ought to go to a great book, Ultimate Sacrifice by Tom Hartman and Lamar Waldron, John and Robert Kennedy, The Plan for a Coup in Cuba and the Murder of JFK. How I love JFK and his memory, all of that. But part of what they did wrong was, you know, the attempts to assassinate Castro. They were hardline right wingers against them. Bobby Kennedy working with Harry Williams and the Cuban anti-Castro Cubans. They were like brothers with a lot of those people there during the before up until the time he was assassinated. Anyways, late '63 and into early '64, LBJ kind of turned off that Cuba operation. But there still were some dirty deeds going on for years after that. But I wanted to, so there's just Ultimate Sacrifice, Louise. If you read that, you might get a better idea of the real history. But what I'm really calling about is this Southwest Stepford wife and fascist fraulein named Cindy McCain. Hello, can you hear me?
Yeah, go ahead. Go ahead.
Her racist statement today. It's more of the coded language than what Bill O'Reilly said last night. I contacted all the appropriate people about him and the FCC and all about what he said about the lynching. She said in direct response to Michelle Obama, obviously, she said, "I'm very, very proud to be an American." She said that out of, she's playing total blissful ignorance to black Americans' history in this nation. And at the total disrespect of Michelle Obama, and I don't care. What are your callers last hour also said? What, you know, you don't threaten to lynch a senator of the United States and his wife. You don't threaten to lynch a black garbage man, a black mechanic, and his wife. You don't threaten to lynch anybody, a poor white guy like me, because I have mental illness and I need government assistance. I feel like I'm being targeted by some of these people, the Ron Paul supporters. These are fascist haters. And Bill O'Reilly is right on that bandwagon. He fuels them every day with their hatred, and I face it every day in the outside world. And it's disgusting. It's evil. And I agree completely with what you were saying last night, Mike. I just want to quickly add to that something about the one thing I have about Obama, the one thing I'd be willing to take, you know, with JFK, he is another outsider coming in there, like my Irish Catholic, your two ancestors, and they murdered JFK.
Hey, Brian?
Yeah.
You made some really good points, but I'll tell you what, let's calm down for a second. You and
okay.
Me. Okay? Let's.
All right.
I'll tell you what, let's. Because I get riled up like that, too. I get crazy, man. If you listen to this program on a regular basis, you know I just get crazy.
I know. So, I'm sorry.
No, you don't have to apologize. I just thought, you know, I've got to move on, and I don't want to just end the phone call, you know, with you way up there in the key of C.
No.
You know,
well,
let's come.
Okay, well, another, see, I know I have these problems in another book I'm reading now in. And I try to think of myself, Mike. I am a former Marine, but I know that way, that path, the violent path, is. It's, I think Senator Obama, what he's saying with Fidel Castro, is the right path to take.
Well, obviously, yeah. Brian, you've got some insights to some of the stuff that a lot of us, you know, have to work a little bit harder to get. You've gotten the insights, and I really respect that.
Yeah.
So I'm glad you called, and I hope you're going to call again. All right.
Okay. Have a good night.
Okay. You okay? Where is he? Wait. Are you okay, Brian?
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Good night, sir.
We'll talk again.
Bye-bye.
Take care. Bye-bye. All right. Who's up next here? Shelley is calling from Donaldsonville, Georgia, listening on the internet. Hey, Shelley.
Hi. How you doing, Mike?
I'm all right. How about you?
Oh, I'm hanging in here in southern Georgia. Barely.
I hear that.
But I was calling about the Castro thing, and I was listening to your earlier caller.
You call about what?
The Castro thing.
Oh, Castro's,
you know, let's not engage him. What I thought was really odd, that this guy doesn't know that if the American government knows he blew up that plane, He admitted he blew up that plane. Mm. He admitted working for the CIA. And when they wanted to prosecute him, even our own Justice Department wanted to go after it, and our government shut it down.
That's right. That's right. And now he lives, if he's still alive, Orlando Bosch, who was involved in more acts of terror. He approaches somebody like John Negroponte or Oliver North in the amount of death that Orlando Bosch is responsible for. And he's protected. He lives here because he was a good terrorist. He was our terrorist.
Right. I mean, the guys bragged about it publicly. I've read the articles. I've read the interviews.
Sure.
And I'm like, what has Castro ever done us? I mean, I'm still wondering when the last time he invaded the United States. Oh, that would be never.
That would be never. You're absolutely right. I think there's a way to solve issues that come way short of dropping bombs, and you probably agree. Shelley, I got to leave there. Thanks a lot, all right?
Okay, you're welcome.
All right, you take care. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
Malloy Show on Nova M Radio. Talk radio matters here.
It's about 25 before the hour. Let me share this email with you. This comes from Russ in Alpharetta, Georgia. Mike, what's the big surprise about lax security on Obama? He's referring to the story earlier tonight about how the Secret Service told the Dallas police to stop the last hour that people were entering the venue to stop checking people's for weapons as they were entering the Obama rally, and several Dallas police department folks were shocked because obviously for the potential for a disaster. So Russ writes, Mike, what's the big surprise about lax security on Obama? I used to do post-production on network news magazine shows. When Colin Powell was first floated as a Republican presidential nominee, this was before the 96 election, I transcribed an interview with his wife wherein she, in no uncertain terms, stated she would never let Powell run for president because he would never live to be inaugurated. I have no idea if it was ever aired. There are a lot of things I transcribed that never aired, particularly for the CIA-owned Cap Cities ABC. Russ goes on, Paul was a guy who could have gotten the Republican nomination, and his wife was right, and Paul knew it. You don't have to listen to that butthole O'Reilly to know there are people in this nation, not connected to any political machine, who will never let a black man be president of the United States. 2008, new reality in America, or whatever the pundits are calling it, BS. If Obama is nominated, and if he is elected, well, it'll be very interesting, won't it? Having watched Bobby Kennedy get shot on television in 1968, I have a real hard time watching Obama's rallies. As they said in Godfather 2, if history has proven anything, it's that you can kill anybody. You think this means only in Mexico or Pakistan? Reality, pal. Obama's best insurance policy would be to select Hillary as his running mate, serving the role as protector-in-chief, just as Big Dick Cheney served for the anointed idiot for the last 8 years. Russ in Alpharetta, Georgia. Yeah, that's a topic that a lot of folks a lot of white people are afraid to talk about. It's been discussed thoroughly in the black community about Obama's candidacy. Because, you know, I mean, let's not fool ourselves. This is you know, we live where we live. I hope that such a thing... I hope there are enough decent Secret Service and the people around Obama and his wife and their family protecting them that are truly there for the reason of protecting them in case something untoward should happen. You know, they tried to assassinate Ford and Reagan. Who else, Kathy? And they were white and both Republicans. So, it is a little scary. Back to your calls. Charles is calling from Connecticut, listening on the Internet. Hey, Charles.
Hello.
Hi.
I never ask you how you are. It's not asking, it's just an observation.
No, well, thank you. I'm fine. As long as I have Super Beans coffee here, superbeans.com coffee. When I said your name, I had just put a big gulp in my mouth. No, I'm fine. I'm doing great. As long as I have my caffeine.
Okay, sound like my sister.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, watching the debate last night, and you know, I was reminded again of last Friday. Andrew Sullivan was on Bill Maher, and normally I can't stand Andrew Sullivan. So, like, between he and Robin Williams, they think that any show that they're on is about them.
Yeah, that's very true.
But he did say something, and I'll paraphrase and add to it, but it is what he said, that, you know, when things do not go well for George Bush, he lies and threatens.
Mm-hmm.
When things don't go well for Dick Cheney, he curses and threatens.
Mm-hmm.
When things don't go well for Hillary, she lies and cries.
Who said that? Andrew Sullivan?
Well, I added the lies and cries.
Oh.
I think I Oberman and I are the only one that noticed in the previous debate her overt lie about the Levin Amendment, which absolutely enraged me.
About the Lebanon Amendment?
The Levin Amendment.
Oh, Carl Levin.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But with Obama, he remains calm and cool and collected. Now, isn't that the temperament you want in a president? Nothing seems to faze him. Not that he's like an automaton, because, you know, he doesn't come across like that, like I think Gerald Ford did.
Mm-hmm.
But nothing seems to flap him.
Yeah, I think there has to be an element of that in a person's personality, or if I dare say, psychological makeup, where... the next president of the United States, especially, is going to be handed five or six hand grenades at the same time with all the pins pulled out.
He's going to be handed, you know, here's the cesspool and here's the thimble.
Yeah, there you go.
But I don't think that, as people think that, you know, he's so in danger, because unlike Bobby Kennedy, we know Obama's track record, and so do the corporations, and he's not that much of a threat to them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Indeed, even less so than Hillary. But
Wait. Let me make sure I understood you there. Are you saying Barack Obama is less of a threat to the corporations than Hillary is?
No, I'm saying he and Hillary, neither one of them are a threat to the corporations.
Well, I don't
think... Maybe slightly more, whereas she loves corporations, clearly. He doesn't have a problem with them, which is good enough.
Well, I think in the right circumstances, Barack Obama would be more interested in making sure that the regulatory agencies designed to control the... always incipient criminality of corporations, Barack Obama would be more willing to make sure those regulatory agencies are staffed by people who are serious about keeping close watch on corporations. Whereas Hillary Clinton, I think in that respect, would probably be just about like George Bush.
Yeah.
She would make sure that the people who went into these regulatory positions, I'm not saying they would be as bad as the people that George Bush put in, but they would adopt kind of a laissez-faire attitude of, well, you know, we don't want to really put a whole lot of pressure on the corporations because the company is in such, or the country's in such bad economic shape, and we got to recover, and yada, yada, yada. I think if, you know, on a scale of measuring how serious Obama or Clinton would be in trying to reassert authority over what corporate America does, I think Obama would be much the better candidate.
Well, almost negating what I said before, there is a whole aura that Obama has sort of created around himself that could, one could hope, if one is far more optimistic than I am, carry him into things that he otherwise would not be of a mind to do, as Roosevelt didn't come in with the intention of the New Deal.
Really? You don't think so? You don't think?
No, I think he did. He is. I think that this aura that's been created around him, this happening that he has become, mm-hmm. Could wind up carrying him through it.
Well, you're probably right. I would tend to disagree with you that about the Roosevelt. I think Roosevelt knew full well what the outlines of the New Deal had to be when he was running for office. But you and I are talking about things that occurred 75 years ago, so we're going to lose anybody who's not interested. Charles, I got to leave it there. Thank you. You made some good points. I do appreciate you checking in. Okay, take it easy. Hannah is calling from Dallas, listening on XM satellite radio. Hey, Hannah.
Hi there, Mike. I've been listening to you since 2003. This is the first time I ever got in.
Oh, well, how are you doing, Hannah?
Well, I always feel pretty good when I'm listening to you because I'm like, wait, Mike, oh, geez, Mike, yeah, you are so great. Oh, God, darn it, I got to get on that online and send out some letters or something like that. I just want to tell you, I sent out an FCC complaint after you were talking yesterday.
Well, good for you.
Also, today, as soon as I heard about this Obama thing, there's some woman here in Dallas that kind of is take a charge kind of person with Move On. And I emailed her about the incident, and I said, look, you should get in touch with the people. You know, she knows a lot of people in the top of Move On.
Right.
And let them know what's happening, and we're gonna have to guard them. We're going to have to observe any security lapses. He's going to, you know, I wouldn't trust the Secret Service. After all, they were eager to testify for, you know, against Monica and against Clinton and Monica, you know.
Absolutely. Hannah, yep. Listen, I got to leave it there because we're flat out of time. Thanks for checking in, and you call me again, all right? We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. When you go up now, jump around, think about you, go man. Yeah. Fall with me in my ear. Tell me all the things. It is 10 before the hour. Thanks to the crew, Ian Huff, who engineered the call, engineered the program and took your calls. Also, Billy Foster, our technical director, podcast manager, Ben Birch, Chris in Minnesota, our senior correspondent, Bob Alexander, our resident philosopher, Bridget Wolf, our writer in residence, although she doesn't live here. For people who got a ticket, I'll see you tomorrow Saturday night in Phoenix, along with Scott Ritter. And tomorrow night, KTLK's own Johnny Wendell will be sitting in for me while I'm on the way to Phoenix. So I look forward to seeing a lot of folks at the gig in Phoenix Saturday night. I'll be back the following Monday. Back to your calls. Andrew is calling. Andrew's calling from Milwaukee, listening on Sirius. Andrew, welcome to the program.
Hi, how you doing, Mike? Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I just got a comment on, you know, well, two comments, actually. One with what Michelle Obama said. I mean, as far as that, she's proud, you know, she's proud of her country. I mean, and then, what's his name? Bill O'Reilly makes a statement about, you know, he doesn't want to fund a lynch mob. I mean, both statements, I mean, why are we hanging on to these words so, I mean, so tightly where, I mean, all it was, you know, figuratively speaking. I mean,
well, let me ask you. See, you only take it so far. What Bill O'Reilly said was, I don't want to join a lynch mob.
A lynch mob, right.
No, wait. Unless Michelle Obama really meant what she said. So you're focusing on the wrong word, lynch. Focus on the word unless.
Okay.
See, what O'Reilly is saying, you know, a lot of people say, well, you know, lynch mob, that's just a figure of speech. To some people, it is a figure of speech. To other people in this country, it's not a figure of speech. It's like I said earlier tonight, when Jewish people talk about the Holocaust, they don't talk about it as though, and nobody else should either, as though it were just, yeah, that was one of the events in World War II. When people talk about, you know, let's substitute the word Holocaust for the word lynch or lynching. When people talk about that, whether they're black or not black, that is one of those explosive words that carries with it, in the case of the word lynch, a 350-year history. And,
yeah.
and all of it is bad. And all of that 350-year history, just like all of the Holocaust is bad. All of the 350-year history of lynching is bad. So if black folk want to sit around and talk about that, that's their business because it concerns them. If Jewish people want to sit around and talk about the Holocaust in whatever terms they want to talk about it, or Shoah, that's their business. But for a white man like Bill O'Reilly to say, I don't want to join a lynching party regarding Michelle Obama unless... She said, ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba. That's going too far, even for a Caucasian like me. That's too far. If you're okay with it, I can't, you know, I'm certainly not going to, you know, tell you that, you know, you got to change your thinking, Andrew. Are you black or white?
Black.
Okay. If you're okay with that kind of talk, then okay. I mean,
I guess it really comes down to, no, I mean, I watch the show periodically. I know his reputation. He's a loose cannon. That he is. I mean, granted, that doesn't justify if his meaning behind it was just as it was said. But, I mean, just by listening to his statements, for me, I mean, it's just what, you know, a lot of people are saying, in today's day and age. Is that people are just extremely so sensitive as to where they want to, you know, what is it, tiptoe around, you know, everything.
Yeah, they're
so afraid
I don't think people want to tiptoe around everything, and I do believe that all humor is based in somebody else's discomfort. So I'm not one to say, well, you can't talk about this, you can't talk about that. I'm not deeply into politically correct speech, as they say. But there
right.
are certain things that, to me, represent death, disfigurement, destruction, murder, night riders, gas chambers, hooded thugs, you know, on horseback, burning people out of their homes. And those kinds of words and images, I don't think I would ever be able to find a comfort zone using those. And
I can respect that.
Okay, so that's all I'm saying, Andrew. Remember, the key word in what O'Reilly said was not necessarily lynch. That was the power word. That was the word that carried with it all the implications of death and destruction. The key word in what he said was the word unless. Unless, yeah.
Right.
All right?
Okay. All right, thanks again for taking my call.
All right, Andrew, call again. Appreciate your comments. Take care. Very quickly, Herman is calling from... Oops. Herman?
Yes, sir.
We got about a minute.
Okay, I just wanted to make a quick comment. Thanks for having me. About the statement, the email that you read about the young guy. I do believe that Colin Powell should have been president of these United States, but because of the corporal attitude... That has been taking place in this country for over 200 years. I don't think that it was a healthy decision. In fact, his wife begged him not to do the process of running for the
right.
presidency.
Right.
But he should have been the president. Now, there's a lot of rules and regulations that have been set up, a lot of boundaries that have been set. Of course, we know there's a lot of things that people have done that we call world records. All these things can be broken, and everything can be healed, not through Obama, but through our own consciousness. Not through Obama. I'm not saying Obama is the savior of the society for today, but just let's just reason with one another. You know what I mean? That's all I got to say.
Sure.
Thank you.
Sure. All right. Thanks, Herman. I appreciate your comment. Would that it were that easy. You know, a lot of people in this country have been trying to sit down and reason over a lot of issues for a long period of time. You know that's the truth. And, you know, maybe when we get further into the political season, I'll take the risk of bringing up, from my point of view, just my point of view, what the Obama, Barack Obama presidency or a candidacy really means to me as a Caucasian. I'll see you Monday. Take care. Don't forget, Johnny Wendell tomorrow night. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio. Keep it lit.